Welcome to Shambles Asia Cast, a podcast series. This series is a mixed bag of conversations with educators from both the private and public sectors in Southeast Asia, and from those who have experience working with schools in the region. www.shambles.net/podcasting. In this program, Chris Smith talks with Paul Caprelli, who has been a teacher in Hong Kong, and then migrated to be the business manager in the Chinese International School in Hong Kong, and in the United Nations International School in New York.
Welcome to Shambles EasyCasts, a podcast series of conversations with educators from both the private and public sectors in Southeast Asia, and also from those who have experience working with schools in the region. My name is Chris Smith. Today, I'm pleased to be able to spend some time with Paul Caprelli, who's based in Hong Kong, teacher, administrator, consultant extraordinaire. Paul, welcome to EasyCasts.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Now, I was thinking of making up a more elaborate intro for you, but I think probably it's better if you sort of, if you can do a sort of a 3-minute CV to let listeners know a bit about yourself.
All right, Chris. Well, I am Paul Caprelli, and I'm currently running an educational consultancy service specifically intended for international and independent schools throughout Asia. It's called Pace Education. I've been established for about a year. Before that, I've actually worked in schools all my working life, both in the UK and in Hong Kong and also in New York. I was a teacher, head of department, head of house, so I had involvement on the pastoral side of the school. And then I moved into business administration and senior management in a large school in Hong Kong, Chinese International School, where I stayed for many years. And then I decided I'd go to New York, and I took a job at the United Nations International School in Manhattan. And I stayed there for 1 year before coming back to Hong Kong and setting up Pace Education.
Okay, thanks for that. So you're a pretty unique guy, though, aren't you? You've gone through the teacher role. You've gone into quite a big career change, even though it's still in education, into administration, and now with wider horizons. How many years were you in Chinese International School? I can't remember. It's a long time.
I was there for 13 years, Chris, and really over that time I helped oversee the growth of the school into what it is today, which is one of the leading bilingual schools in Asia.
Okay, I'd like to come back to that bilingual thing a little bit later on. Tell me, were you in Chinese International School from the very beginning? Because it wasn't very old, the school, when you went there, was it?
Well, the school was maybe approaching 25 years old, actually.
Oh, okay.
But when I joined the school, it was still quite young. The secondary section was very, very small. And the school was located in three temporary sites across Hong Kong Island. And the year after I joined, we all came together on one site, purpose-built school in Braemar Hill on Hong Kong Island. And since then, the school has just grown. It's grown in numbers, it's grown in reputation. It now is an IB, MIP, and diploma school.
Okay.
And it achieves fantastic results.
Here ends the advert. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
There is, and actually one of the best views in Hong Kong, I think, from CIS, right?
Absolutely.
Picking up on one of your main areas of experience now, which is the administration in an international school, because you have that perspective, as teachers are always knocking administrators and saying they don't understand education, you're being a bit different from the normal administrator. What would be the particular challenges or celebrations of such a job? And in fact, I'm not even sure what the difference between a bursar and an administrator is. Maybe you could talk a bit about that.
The job I'd had at Chinese International School and also in New York, it was a member of the senior management team, a very small senior management team in both cases, actually. And I had official responsibility for all the non-academic aspects of the school. But it was a very collaborative approach. And I think one of the things I really enjoyed was the involvement in education still. Because as you said, I was a teacher initially. And in fact, at Chinese International School, I continued to teach sporadically economics at IB level, at diploma level.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I think that gives... Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
I oversaw children doing their extended essays as well in economics. That, I think, gives me a fairly unique perspective from a business manager's point of view. I certainly cannot be accused of not knowing what goes on in the classroom. But really, it sounds corny, but I do believe that the education that goes on is the main thing, and everything else that happens in the business side and in the support side is just that. It's a support. It's a secondary service. And maybe that attitude helps me to get by. Things were a little bit different in New York, actually.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm going to ask you about New York more towards the end. What is the difference between the bursar, the term bursar, and the term administrator? Is there a difference?
I think there is a difference, actually. I think the business manager, without denigrating bursars, but I think it's a higher level job. It certainly is in an independent international school. You really are at, or you should be, or you can be, at the crux of the school. You're a crucial underpinning, really. Or you're a very important link between the board, the headmaster, the staff, both teaching and support staff, and the parent body as
right.
well. And I think that's a little bit more than what the traditional role of a bursar involves. It's a bit like being the CFO or and the head of human resources of a reasonable-sized organization. That's what you're doing. Which I think is a little bit more challenging than the traditional role of bursar, but I may be wrong.
So you're really doing the work of two people. So, of course, the school is paying you double salary, right?
No, certainly not, Chris.
Okay.
No, I had to look after the pennies in both jobs.
Right. Chinese International School was one of the first completely bilingual, bilateral schools in Hong Kong. Is that right? Mandarin and English?
Certainly has aspirations to be bilingual. I'm not so certain. I think Chinese and CIS itself would say it's not fully bilingual. English remains the dominant language at CIS.
Right.
And that's maybe not the case with some, or one or two at any rate, of the new kids on the block who are trying to be much more bilingual. For example, in the administration at CIS, really the whole of the administration was in English.
Yes.
And this therefore left a subsidiary role for Chinese, and quite a challenge. It was really, really quite a challenge to get the balance right between English and Chinese.
In what ways would you say that was a challenge?
It was a challenge to encourage the teachers, I think, to take as active a role as possible in the school and in the running of the school and in the school's committees. Because I think they felt slightly marginalized, because everything was done in English, conducted, every meeting was conducted in English, all the minutes were in English, all the announcements were in English, therefore the Chinese language teachers are constantly conducting themselves in a second language.
I understand.
So it's really quite a challenge to get that balance to work well.
Yes. How's your own Mandarin?
I think they're doing a great job.
Yes. How's your own
my own Mandarin?
Your own Potomac
is appalling.
Really?
It's just a little bit worse than my Cantonese.
Well, I think you might remember I put a lot of effort into learning Cantonese.
I know you did.
And then everybody speaks Potomac now. Everybody speaks Mandarin now. So I think that reflects my own management skills. Which are pretty poor in that case. I chose the wrong language to learn. Okay, you said you're part of the senior management of the schools, at least two of the international schools you've been in. So you have a lot of connections with head teachers. If you were to talk with a teacher or a head teacher who was coming out to work in an international school in Hong Kong for the first time, what advice would you give them?
I think I would tell them to embrace the place. Embrace it, its people, its culture, its language. It's a little bit easy when you go to a place like Hong Kong to live in an expat cocoon, and I criticize myself. But you can live in an expat bubble, and that may be even more true in certain other countries. where you're really quite isolated from the local population. So I think the important thing is to make an effort to understand, you know, what the host families are doing, to find out about the local festivals, to be respectful of the local customs, that you are in fact a guest in that society. I think I'd tell the incoming head to be confident, confident in his ability, his or her. You know, they've been appointed against, often against, enormous competition, and they shouldn't feel threatened. I think working in international schools can be a very stressful, lonely existence for heads and, in fact, for business managers, which was why in Hong Kong we formed an association of business managers, which became a very, very useful conduit for discussion. You can end up very isolated, so be confident, get out and explore the outside world, be adaptable. People coming to Asia, I think, and the international schools which are very successful in Asia, have a real challenge on their hands to prove themselves. You start again when you come to a place like an independent or international school in Hong Kong.
Yes.
I'm sure that's true in other countries as well.
I'd probably add to that, I hope they like a variety of different food.
I think they've got to do that.
The restaurants in Hong Kong are just unbelievable.
Yeah, they are actually. Having, you know, spent a year in New York, I really now appreciate the variety and quality of the food in Hong Kong. It's really quite outstanding.
More than New York?
Oh, absolutely.
You just mentioned the Hong Kong Association of Business Managers. That was business managers in international schools.
That's correct. It started off being a group of business managers. There were about five of us, actually. And gradually it has grown. And in fact, the heads, the principals and heads of the international schools also joined us because they had no meeting place. They were very isolated. And it became a group of 25, maybe, international schools in Hong Kong.
Yes.
All the business managers and heads.
Very useful. Has that spread across Asia, or has that stayed in Hong Kong, as far as you know?
I know that there are some groups.
Yeah, I know for Bissia and ERCOS, I think both have administrator meetings.
Yes, they do. The ERCOS meeting in Bangkok is coming up soon. And those are very useful because they provide what they call job-alike sessions, which are really quite useful meeting places. And it's very, very useful for a business manager in, say, China to know what his competition is like and to know what is going on around the region. We've conducted, for example, the business managers group in ERCOS conducted surveys annually on salaries, fees, conditions, benefit packages, that sort of thing. Very, very useful.
There's so many things that are done individually. Sharing across schools is so much more efficient with resources. If one of the listeners to this discussion wanted to find out more about the Hong Kong Association of Business Managers in International Schools, How would they do it?
It isn't actually officially formed. It's an unofficial group. So it's not formed as a company or a society. So I think the best thing would be to contact me, actually. What happens is that a school hosts a meeting.
Yes.
And then the next, at that meeting, they decide which school will host the next meeting.
Yes.
And that head teacher or business manager does the minutes, the agenda, and so on, and conducts the meeting. Very unofficial.
Right, and they provide the tea and coffee and the ginger nut biscuits, right?
Exactly. I know the schools that I always want to be hosted in.
Oh, they do the best catering, right?
Absolutely.
I better not ask
and
you.
And one that isn't on Lantau or in
or
in an outlying island.
Oh, they require you to take a ferry to get there.
Correct.
Okay.
Or a tunnel, actually.
Yes. Okay, you mentioned New York earlier, that you worked for a year in the
United Nations International School.
In New York. Can you tell us a bit about that, especially how it compares with the Asian culture? You know, you were immersed in an Asian culture in Hong Kong, and then straight into New York. That must have been a bit of a cultural shock, was it?
Hong Kong and New York are actually very, very similar places. I lived in a high-rise in New York, in Manhattan, actually, on the 23rd floor. Looking out, I had a marvelous view. It was a very unusual apartment. But New York and Hong Kong, I think, are very, very similar places. New York is a little bit less busy and frantic, believe it or not, but it's much more cosmopolitan. The biggest differences, I think, in terms of actual work, actually working in Hong Kong and in New York, for me were the security issues. I was working at the UN school, so security was a major concern, as you can imagine. You know, the children came from every nationality, every country in the world, really. There were children from a massive number of countries, and the staff came from an equally varied group of countries. But that brought its own issues of security. I think another difference is working in old facilities. In Hong Kong, and I think in a lot of Asian schools, you get used to working in brand new facilities. Schools are not more than 20 years old, whereas the building in New York was, I think, built in the 1960s. And it showed both in its design and its maintenance. So that was a real challenge. I think another difference is that in New York I had to work with a union. In Hong Kong, of course, and in most Asian cities, I would imagine, trade unions are not an issue. And so that's really very challenging to work closely. It also, actually, we touched on this earlier, but there is a tremendous difference in New York between management and teachers. There's a gap between them. It's very difficult to overcome that, and I think that's a real shame.
Is this an us and them?
Very much so, and I'm not that sort of person.
So you became the bad guy, right?
Or the good guy to some people.
But the lure of Hong Kong brought you back.
It did, actually, I have to say. I missed Hong Kong enormously.
You came back to Hong Kong in 2005, is that right? 2005?
That's correct. That's correct, in the summer of 2005.
And declared independence and set up an independent consultancy, which is a bit of a brave thing to do. I can say that from personal experience as well.
Yes, you know.
And very unnerving at the beginning, but gets better as time goes on. But you set up this consultancy to offer the experience that you've built up over the years. To international schools across Southeast Asia. So would you like to spend a few minutes talking about what sort of support or what form of support that was available to international schools or independent schools?
Well, I'm working with schools, international independent schools, mostly on the non-academic side of school governance, school management and leadership. Examples of projects that I've taken on so far that might help people to understand what I'm trying to do. I've done a feasibility study into a school expansion project. I've done the redesign of salaries and benefits packages. And that's quite a challenge, I think, for schools. And I think it's useful for schools to bring, and for heads and for boards, to bring in an outsider to help facilitate change, particularly in something like salaries and benefits packages. It doesn't have to, in fact, of course, be a drop in salaries and benefits. It could be designing increases, improvements to the package.
Yes.
Those packages have to be relevant in the modern world in which we live. I've developed development plans for new schools. I've worked with two schools in China working on their development plans. Very interesting work. I've established funding vehicles for schools, such as debenture schemes, which that's a tool in Hong Kong schools. It doesn't actually exist in many international schools in Asia, but in Hong Kong it's very prevalent. Parents have to buy debentures. So I worked with a school on redesigning their debenture scheme.
Okay.
I've done business plans.
Yes. Does that fundraising also include fundraising events or other
ways
to
bring in? I don't get involved very much in fundraising events as such. That's not really an area of expertise or interest for me. I've also worked with boards on effective school governance. So with one board, I helped them to redesign their governance and their committee structure, and how they were working with their head and, in fact, their relationship with the staff as well. So it's really helping schools with any aspect of their management, leadership and governance. Financial, budgeting, human resources issues are a major part of my work. I can also help them with things like outsourcing of operations, if they want, and helping them with capital projects. I'm working with a school at the moment, working on a new capital project that they have. Very interesting.
And these are not just opportunities for schools in Hong Kong. You've set your sights across Southeast Asia, right?
That's correct. I'll go anywhere, actually, Chris. I worked with a school in, as I say, two schools in China, mostly in Hong Kong, but that's so far because that's where my reputation is. It's where I'm based. It's where I'm a known factor.
Yes.
But of course, I would be very, very happy to work with schools across Asia. And it's not an expensive service, Chris.
Well, it's certainly much more cost-effective for schools than bringing somebody all the way from Europe or from the States.
Absolutely.
And it can make it so that it's not just a one-off hit session when you visit a school. It can be part of a longer, ongoing program.
That's correct.
That's one of the benefits of
living
in Asia.
I would like to establish longer-term relationships. And I think, therefore, the first project or two, I think people get a lot of value out of me, of course.
Yeah. Okay, that's helpful, I hope, to people who are listening about what's available. I'll ask you in a minute about how they can find more information. But I can't resist. I can't resist now. I'm sorry. You know I have an ICT, a technology background.
I know.
And I think you know what I'm going to ask you now. I can't resist asking, what are your three favorite internet websites?
Honestly, don't surf the web much.
Okay, but...
I thought about it. I like YouTube.
Oh, that's interesting. That's...
In terms of actual hits... I probably hit the universal currency converter most, and I really like, this isn't a website, but I really like Google Earth. I think that's a fascinating site.
Oh, it is a website, very much so.
It is a website.
Yeah, I reckon Google Earth is brilliant. Not being used by many school websites yet, but for them to use that to show the location of a school, for instance, is a magical resource. It's free. And
I have a fabulous view of my own apartment in Hong Kong on Google Earth, yeah. Certain countries are featured more prominently, I guess, aren't they?
Oh, yes. I went and did some work in Laos last year, and I thought, I'll have a look in the outback of Laos to see where I'm going. Mm. And it was just all green trees, and I think the photograph was a year at least old. So,
yeah, I looked up our family home in northern Italy. Really didn't find very much.
But it's getting better. And actually, there are some other alternatives to Google Earth, which are also very good.
So I'm a bit pathetic as an internet website browser, I'm afraid.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't have talked about websites. Maybe I should have asked you about software that you felt comfortable with.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true, actually, Chris, because to be honest, I am reasonably confident in a lot of software, yeah. I'm pretty much on top of Excel and anything else, and PowerPoint and Word and all that. But that's pretty boring for the listeners, so I don't suppose anyone will want to hear that, Chris.
Okay. Actually, I would have liked to. I'm not going to, and maybe we can do this sometime in the future, but I would have liked to have talked a bit more about administrative software packages that different schools are using. But we won't touch on that now. I think that's a question that often comes from schools. What are you using as a school management system and as a financial package?
School management systems are very tricky. That's a very interesting point.
Okay, so we're almost at the end. We keep these to 20 to 30 minutes long, and we're getting close to the end. If any listeners wanted to contact you to find out more information about the consultancy or about the work that you can offer them, how you can support schools, how could they do that?
Well, I have a website, Chris, not surprisingly. It's www.paceeduc.com. That's PACEEDUC.com.
Okay.
I, of course, have phone numbers, but they're all shown on the website.
Okay. Do you want to give out your email address or leave it? Is it on
sure.
the website?
It is, but it's very easy. It's paul@paceeduc.com. Paul, P-A-U-L, at PACEEDUC.com.
Okay, so that's close to the end. Now, I did warn you that it might be nice to have a sort of ask you if you could share any sort of anecdotes or experiences that you'd had over the past years, and there've been a lot of years. Is there anything that comes to mind you'd like to share with?
I don't know, Chris. Just enjoy life. Oh. Just do your best, and that's all you can do. That was my motto at CIS, actually. I'm just here to do my best. It's the best I can do.
Okay. Thanks very much for sharing your time and your experiences. Possibly in a year's time or so, we can talk and pick up one of the specific areas you've mentioned.
Yes, that would be good. If this is going out, Chris, before the AIRCOS conference, which is going to be held in... November in Bangkok. I will be there, so if anyone wants to talk to me, find me there.
So, Paul, thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Chris.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Shambles Asia Cast, a podcast series created by Chris Smith. www.shambles.net/podcasting. The music heard in this series is from Magnatune. www.magnatune.com.
It's out there somewhere. The trick is finding it.